Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to our game cabinet here at AU Radio. This week we are talking the ever so popular, ever so loved Magic the Gathering.
Woo! Sparkle effects. I don't actually have a sparkle effect. I can't put that in.
Letting me down over there, Hannah. Letting me down. This is a game that is very near and dear to my own personal heart. I've been playing for a good chunk of time. Doesn't mean I'm the best, just means I'm addicted. One of my favorite things that I ever heard as a child, get your children into Magic, they won't have money for drugs. And God, is that true.
I feel like that's a lot of card-based games.
It is, but the way that Magic's release system works and the way that their community kind of drive, how they have the standard format, really does drive those sales and that need to go out and buy the next pack, because essentially, if you don't, you eventually fall out of standard, and some people only play standard. Some people are like me, though, and tend to play only like historic, and I guess technically now it's known as legacy, which is I want everything, vintage even. Like, I want it all. I just want to play with all the cards that I ever have. I mean, I have some cards that are 18 plus years old. It sucked to just look at them and be like, well, you don't get to be played with.
Yeah, I've never quite understood. I mean, I understand it from a, we gotta get money, we gotta get people to spend money on our product so that we can stay in business kind of standpoint.
Yeah.
But I don't really understand it from a gaming standpoint, being like, oh, and now these are no longer relevant.
So, it's kind of like Warhammer. They do it really slowly. Like, they do it really slowly, but eventually models do become, like, obsolete and stuff like that. With Magic, it's all about that tournament scene. That is the whole reason for standard. And that's why I tell a lot of people who are like, hey, I'm looking to get into Magic and stuff. And I'm like, okay, do you want to play this and like do tournaments and stuff? Or do you want to just play this with a couple of your friends and have fun? Because if that's the case, don't think of standard as a format, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, that's a heavy personal opinion. But I'm like, don't even think about it that way. Because as you collect over the next couple of years, things are going to fall out of standard. And if you're playing with just your friends, just have fun. Like, a lot of my friends and I, we play with banned cards because we're not doing the things that made them banned usually. My easiest example is I have a Gristlebrand in one of my decks. I have solemnly sworn to all of my players that I'm never, like, all my playgroup players, that I won't use his ability more than once per turn. And he's got a cool, you pay 7 life, draw 7 cards.
Okay.
That's all it is. He also happens to be a 7/7 with flying and lifelink. But the reason he got banned wasn't because of the flying and lifelink and all the extra stuff, which we'll get into kind of what one of those talk about later. What made him banned was that people would drop 35 life at the start of a commander game where you start with 40.
Oh.
And essentially you draw 35 cards. You can then sift through and mill down to exactly what you need to win the game. And people would just stack their deck with infinite combos that were black-based, essentially.
I see.
And that's why he got banned, is because it became too much. You could make him your commander. You could cheap him out. You could get him out real cheap, real fast if you play smart, you know, things like that. And so I get why he became a banned card. But, you know, talking to your playgroup is usually what you should do, in my opinion.
What?
And just be like,
communication among players?
What? You know what? Well, we're going to get into some of that later, too. I got a fresh new opinion on FNM. But yeah, Magic the Gathering has been, it's a 28-year-old card game coming this September or December, one of the two.
Wow.
Yeah, it was either a full year or just a year before I was born. And I've been playing since I was about 8, so gives a little minute to play the game. That's also why it's so loved and cherished, is that it started as such a small micro thing, and through the love of the community, it absolutely exploded. And they've taken some weird steps, in my opinion, from where they started and how communal-centric they were, but they still try to make sure that they really do communal things. They're always trying to do the best they can. And in my opinion, they've been one of the best people to hold standards for how to act when at a Friday Night Magic, FNM, when you're at a tournament, and how you behave in their company. That has been a very big thing that they've always done, and I've always appreciated that. They had a gentleman who was saying some really nasty things, and in the middle of one of his games that he was at, like, at one of their home offices, essentially, his boss came out onto the tournament floor, pulled him from the tournament, and told him to pack his things and go home. That's the kind of, those are the kind of people I can get behind when you're like, wow, you've got, like, we're not even going to give you another warning because you've gone so past a warning that not only are we going to pull you from your own job, but we're going to pull you out of this tournament that you're playing.
Which, and I do appreciate that a lot. And I know, yeah, as a store at AU, we had some issues with the Magic scene for a very long time, and we actually stopped hosting for a time and then started back up again with really strict rules.
Yeah, we... It's a really sensitive subject.
Yeah, I don't want to poke.
No, and it's only sensitive because we as a store, I feel personally, this is personal opinion warning, I feel we didn't have somebody who was willing to be confrontational enough when we needed it, and we had two sides of extreme. We either had somebody who would either be too confrontational about it, or we'd have people who would just cow down and kind of get yelled at to the point of really ridiculousness.
I mean, that's just retail worker.
Yeah, and I get, you know, and I get that. But when you're working on a community and you're working with a community, you need to have really solid guidelines about how we behave and how things go. And you also, in my opinion, need a solid punishment system. Yeah. And that's not to say punishment has to be harsh, but, like, I do a 2-week suspension, essentially. I'm like, come back in 2 weeks. I understand if you're having a bad week this week. We all have it. But if I have to do that in the course of 2 or 3 months, I have to do that 2 or 3 times, maybe we're not the store for you to play at. And I hate having to say that, but I have to think about my community.
Well, and I've been so impressed pre-COVID.
Yeah.
You know, with the Magic community that we were building here at the store. Everybody was super solid. We had a great group of people. I miss seeing them on a week. Like, I miss you, Wonder 8. I don't even play Magic. And I miss our Magic.
But seeing those guys was nice because they would talk and have a relationship with us.
So looking forward to getting events back up and getting them back in the store and getting to see them because our community was solid.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see there's been a big influx of newer players, and having, like I said, having such a solid community is now one of the best tools I have in my belt as somebody who runs these events, because I can rely on my community to also help curb behavior before I have to step in. Because I hate having to step in, because when I'm stepping in, that means that there's an actual problem.
Yeah.
And so if it's, you know, dude's popping off and one of my regulars is like, hey, man, that's just not how we do it here.
Yeah.
You mind chilling out? And that guy goes, oh, my bad. You know, I'm kind of used to a more, I hate to use this term, but a possibly younger scene in the Magic scene tends to be a little bit more rah.
Yeah. Well, it was the same with our D&D game group that we had.
Yeah.
Great group of people, and they really self-policed. If we as a store had to step in, things had gone beyond what the DMs could control.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about having these guys, and that's why, or these folk, I should say. they're really, really good about being super inclusive. Everybody's welcome at their tables every time they play, and they do such a good job of self-policing. I've never had to step in. That's the thing, is I think I've had to step in once, and it was a quick, like, hey, this is kind of your warning. You guys are, you know, causing a little bit too much of a ruckus. You mind chilling out?
Yeah.
And usually that's as far as I had to go, because there was enough self-policing that once I had to say something, they're like, oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think I've only ever had to go back and talk to the Magic people one time, like, when you weren't here. And it was literally, hey guys, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and we have a lot of kids in the store. Can we keep the profanities down to a minimum?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh yeah.
And most of our events are much later in the evening, and so there aren't as many kiddos. I mean, we've still got a pretty good rule about being like, hey, be reasonable. And most of them follow up, but, you know, you get a really good rivalry match going, and you get a little riley, it happens.
I mean, we play games together, Drew.
Yeah.
We're loud. Am also that person.
Yeah. That's why I was like, yeah, you know, it happens, but, you know, at the same time, there are children in the store sometimes. Maybe don't scream that.
Yeah. Especially the ones where it was, like, Pokemon, and then went straight into magic where there was still like
that transition gives me so much anxiety because some of those Pokemon kids are like, oh, I'm just gonna hang out because it's just like casual Tuesday night magic. They're super cool with us hanging out and being here. I'm gonna sit around and play another game. And then yeah, I have some of my guys come in and I'm like, hey, I swear like a sailor. I'm really well behaved on this podcast and I try to be really well behaved in our game room. I get it. But nobody at that table's over 10, my man. Chill. Like, oh yeah, all right, cool. You know, and it's always really clean and easy to clean up and people are super awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I guess we should kind of talk about what Magic the Gathering is, because we've kind of just been talking like people know. And, well, if you don't know, no offense, but what have you been doing living under a rock?
I mean, I work at a game store. I know many people who play Magic. I don't know how to play Magic.
And that's fine, but you know what Magic is.
I know it's a collectible, like a card
TCG
game. Yeah.
Trading card game. Yeah. I'm gonna try to make sure we use the full terms and then we get into our abbreviations. But yeah, you at least know what it is. I know dudes who they've never set foot near a real gaming store. They work at, you know, a Walmart. They know what Magic is. You know, they might not know. They might just go, it's a card game. Cool. You at least know.
Yeah.
You know? But that is what Magic is. It is a trading card game that was made in 1993. By a man named Richard Garfield. He also had a couple of other hands in it, but he's the one who's really
1993?
Yeah, 1993.
I'm older than Magic.
What, barely?
By a couple years.
Richard Garfield was at like Whitman College, made this wonderful game where you use you, the player, or what you call a planeswalker. Getting into a little bit of the lore. This is some warning. I hate being this guy and going into this lore. If you come ask me at the store to teach you how to play Magic, I promise this is not the spiel you'll get. I don't do Magic the Hassling. I like to play Magic the Gathering. I'll probably tell you some of the we'll get into the basics here in a minute, but that's probably where we'll start and then I'll have you play some games. But the lore goes deep and there are those guys. I love you guys. You are my favorites. But I don't need that here.
I mean, there's entire books. You could just go read the books.
Oh, yeah. Go read the books. They were phenomenal. Skip War of the Spark. It was awful. That's personal opinion. You can totally go read it. Plenty of people probably liked it. But
views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Adventures Underground.
Yeah, sometimes we need that. I'm a very opinionated person. I didn't like it. I have a pretty solid grasp on what Magic's lore was for a while. And then I did a little bit of extra research to get me to like right up to the edge of War of the Spark. And even then, I had no clue. I went and then watched about 5 more hours to have somebody who had read War of the Spark go back and explain all the things that you needed to know leading up to it. And I still didn't like the book. So that's a personal thing. Just okay. If I gotta do a whole lot. You are as a player, a thing called a planeswalker, and you essentially, as the game progresses, are going through different planes and gathering energies from those planes to cast bigger and better spells. Spells range from spells and artifacts. Sorry, those are two different things. Spells range from anything that is something that affects the board to a creature to a solid, you know, thing that happens repeatedly because on the board kind of a deal. There are a few card types. The basic one is like your mana is what a lot of people call it. It's called your land. You have your basic kind of lands and that's spent to cast everything in the game. And then you've got like creatures. You've got instances which go from like countering target spell, you know, preventing somebody from playing a damaging spell or a creature spell. And then there's obviously, like I was just saying, damaging spells. There are enchantments. Enchantments are pretty cool. They're actually a playstyle I play pretty heavy into because I like the solidness of them. They're an effect that hits the board and stays there for a minute, whether that independently by itself affecting the board and affecting me or my opponent, or it's a enchantment that affects the creature, like make this creature bigger or make this creature a little bigger, but give it flying. And so there are different kinds of effects that'll help you in your ultimate goal, which is to defeat your opponent who has 20 hit points, and then they are banished back to their own home plane, and that's kind of it for them. It is a game that can take anywhere from 10 minutes. I think I had a match today actually last about that long, and it was a solid match between me and the guy. We just happened to be going quick enough. And then I've had matches that have lasted 3 hours. mind you, game formats kind of end up being a thing into that. So, like, there is, we talked about standard earlier. That is kind of your base. That's the latest, like, six blocks or something like that, six sets that have come out. As a new one comes in, older ones drop out, and it kind of keeps it fresh. Then there's, like, historic, or I think they're calling it pioneer nowadays. I think they bounce back and forth between what they actually want to call it. I think they're settling on historic now. But that kind of includes everything back to, like, a little bit before Gate Crash, so it kind of cuts out some of the older stuff. And then you've got, like, Commander, which is a vintage style, but is a singleton format. And that's normally when you start getting those, like, hour to four games. Because Commander, you start with 40 life. You have a certain card that you're almost always going to be able to play and put a formula kind of around. Whether that formula is super silly or to something super very concise. This is what I do. This is how I do it. And that's one of my favorite formats. It's actually the format I suggest to new players. Even though it's meant a little more for the older heads, I suggest either Brawl or Commander because of the singleton format.
Okay.
It's really hard to spend $200 on $230 on two boxes of Magic to be like, cool, this will get me a good solid collection, and I might get enough duplicates that I could actually do something with a decent deck. It's a lot easier to buy a couple of starter decks, buy a few packs here and there, and you play with your basic Planeswalker decks or Challenger decks, whatever you want to call them to start with, and then work your way into being like, well, okay, now I'm going to make a Commander deck as my first deck I'm going to make, because I don't have to worry about having three or four copies of every card that I want to have in that deck. I can worry about just having that one copy, and then using, you know, having a couple win conditions instead of just one.
Does the deck size vary based on playstyle?
Absolutely. Commander is a 100-card singleton. Brawl is a 60-card singleton. Singleton meaning single of each card. And then your standard or even your standard format, like your base style of play, is going to be a 60-card deck with up to four copies of every card other than your basic land. Basic land, you're allowed to have as much as you want in it. Like, you could have a deck that's 60 cards and 40 of its land. That's not going to work very well, but you can sure do it.
You just draw your cards and you're just like, yep, I can't do anything.
You know what? Small tangent. I could probably make an okay deck around that idea. I'd probably do 30 lands. Like, I can make my deck 50-50, but there are enough creatures in the game nowadays that'll let you drop extra land, or spells that let you drop extra land, that fill out like half of your deck with those and then the other half with like really big boomy cards that go off of having a stupid amount of land.
I'm just thinking of like how my luck always works. and like I would shuffle my deck and I would end up just drawing land. Like I would have 30 land in the deck and that's all I would draw for the first like,
and you know what,
25 cards, and I'd be like, cool, this is awful.
Random number generator's a real thing. Like, it's a thing that a lot of Magic players do pay a heavy amount of attention to in their decks, what ratios and proportions we have. If you have a 60-card deck, you have four copies in there. You know, you're bound to see it, you should see it at least every 14 cards?
Yeah, something like that.
15 cards?
I'd have to do the math.
60. Yeah, whatever. Either way, it's about a fourth of your deck, a tenth of your deck has that in it almost. So you're just a little shy of that. You should see it about every 10 to 15 cards you pull, so you can pretty much base your game on what kind of cards you're going to be pulling when you've got four copies in it.
That's how it should work.
Yeah.
But then you have people like me who have the worst luck in the entire world, and that is not how it would work.
Yeah, and then you shuffle up and you're like, all right, cool, I'm all sorts of ready, and you draw no land. And you're like, all right, well, I'll mulligan, go down to one. And then you draw, and you're like, well, okay, now it's all land. let's see if we can try this one more time. Personal advice. Unless you are an incredibly, incredibly experienced Magic player, do not mulligan past five cards. You're going to start doing more damage than you're going to start helping yourself. You can draw into better things. You can't take away that card advantage you've already given the opponent.
Yep.
Mind you, I play minorly competitive. Like, I don't do tournaments or anything, but my friends and I are pretty competitive against each other. I have a few decks that are more or less banned because people do not like to play against them.
Says the guy who, like, when he started working here was all, yeah, my friends don't play Magic with me anymore because I'm really competitive.
I was really competitive. Like I said, I had to work on it for a really long time. No, my friends don't play Magic with me other than George. George is my best friend when it comes to playing Magic. Him and Kyle are the only people who will actually play with me and do it because they have fun. Like, my Wednesday group, they'll hit me up maybe once a month now to be like, hey, you want to play some Magic? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm usually the first one dead because they'll all three will just kind of turn on me. Like, ah, okay, I see how it is. But that's why you start making really, really fun decks where you don't really care how you do. We play a lot of commanders. One of the last commanders I made was Niv-Mizzet. He's one of every color. When he comes out on the board, you reveal the top 10 cards for every color pair. You put it into your hand. So I just put a bunch of bombs in there, like a bunch of things that I was like, oh, this will either win me the game or just completely and utterly disrupt and blow up the board state. Like, awesome. This is going to be great. And if I could just get them to leave me alone enough, being like, well, it's turn four, guys, and I haven't really done anything. And they're like, oh, yeah, maybe we should start kind of focusing on everybody else who's gaining, you know, a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, yes, this is correct. Leave me alone. Turn six. Oh, I get that final one. Niv-Mizzet. Suddenly I have all these things in my hand and I'm like, okay, cool. Stuff. You hate me now. I get it.
So you play Magic like I play Rummy.
Yes.
Where I just hoard all of my cards until the very end, and then I'm just like, ha 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 ha, I win.
Yeah. Yes, I'm very, very close to playing like that. You do have a maximum hand size of 7.
I mean, you do in Rummy also, but
if you get really lucky, though, there are cards. So, the best way to put it, Magic has very few basic rules. It has 30,000 cards that break those rules in 40,000 different ways.
Gosh, I love games that where the rules don't actually matter,
a basic turn is essentially, all right, it's your upkeep. Anything that triggers at the beginning of upkeep triggers here. And you're like, all right, cool. Now it's your draw step, untap step. And you're like, all right, cool, everything's untapped, I'm drawn up, play a card, play however much resources you have to play your cards, attack or don't attack, go into your second phase, choose whether you want to play an extra creature, you're done. And then there are cards that you're like, okay, it's turn one, I play a white card, or I play a white land, I tap this white land, I play this bird that has flying and first strike. And you're like, what is that? Well, so my flying, walking creatures can't hit flying unless they have an ability called reach, usually indicated by a bow or something like that, you know, some sort of thing to help it. Which is really cool. They always have, it's always realistic to why that thing should have reach, you know, an elven archer or a giant spider. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. But it's like, oh, and then what's first strike? It's like, oh, okay, when we go into combat, instead of our creatures doing everything at the same time, mine hits first. So if yours isn't strong enough to, like, if it's not strong enough to live through my attack, it's going to die and I'll be fine. Oh, you've already changed the rules of engagement. Yes, I have. Get used to this. This is what's going to happen the rest of the game. These were the rules, and now we're going to break them. But that's what makes it so much fun, in my opinion, is the, like, people talk about how crazy strategic chess is, and that forever was the epitome of strategy game, essentially, was chess and how good you could be, because everybody has the same thing. Magic's the opposite, complete opposite, where everybody doesn't have the same thing. You have what you have, and you better work with it. You have what you have, and it's probably incredibly different than that guy, unless you're doing like a draft or something along those kind of lines where you have a limited selection of cards. You've got to make do, and I kind of like that. I like survival games too. Like, I'm a big, like, Kincaid's finally gotten into survival on Minecraft.
Oh, nice.
I don't particularly care for creative. I'll sit down and play 3 hours of survival because you have to survive and work with what you got, and I really, really enjoy that for some reason.
And I'm such the opposite. I am the person that just turns on creative mode and builds, like, replica Greek pantheon.
You're also a creator. This is actually kind of something Katie and I were just talking about last night. She showed me a movie called Bliss. It was an okay movie. I didn't dislike it. I didn't love it. But I kind of got into, she was like, well, why? And I was like, I'm not an artist. This is very much an artist's movie. And so I'm not on that wavelength as far as like comprehension and how things go. And I don't particularly see things that way. Yeah, I paint minis and I doodle. That's about as far as my art goes. I like to build things. Like, that's the thing, is I like to take raw resources and make them into something new. And so that's why I think I like the survival style better. And I think that that's why I like magic so much, is that it's here are your tools. These are the tools you've gotten, that you've collected, and that you've managed to hold on to. What can you do with those tools to beat that other guy?
Oh, that's pretty rad.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of like. That's one of the weird things that I like about survival games and things that are kind of in that nature of, I don't necessarily want to always have the same tools everybody does. I like having different things and being like, this is all I have. This is what I'm going to work with. I've made plenty of decks with buying 3 packs. You know, somebody was like, hey, I want to play 60 card. And I'm like, I don't have one. Give me a minute. And smush these things together. And now I'm going to play with them because why not? Let's see what happens. What do I have at my disposal to try to win? But I don't like pre-built decks. I would rather play with 3 random packs than to play with a pre-built most of the time.
That's fair.
And it brings a lot of... This will sound funny to some of you, you old-time Magic players. It brings a lot of people together. You know, it is called Magic the Gathering for a reason. It was meant to help during gatherings. Its original intent was primarily to be played at cons in between panels. You went from, you're staying at the same panel for the next, you know, for the next one, or the same showroom for the next panel. Well, you've got 20, 30 minutes until those guys are going to be set up, ready.
Yeah.
What are you going to do in that time? Well, let's pull out our quick decks of, you know, 60 card decks, play against each other. We only got 20 hit points. It should take, like I said, sometimes it takes 10 to 30 minutes only. And if you're playing a really solid, paying attention, moving, you can play games that quickly. It's just become more since then.
Yeah, now it's you go to the conventions to play Magic.
Yeah, now you, yeah, exactly. Like the last time our hobby guy Robert went to Rose City, he specifically signed up for a Magic event because, one, they do really awesome things where they just give you a bunch of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, you kind of come out feeling like a baller. And you also pretty much get to play Magic all day. Like, even after you're out of your... That's the cool thing. Even after you're out of the tournament for, like, the drafts and stuff like that, people are sitting around. People are just hanging out, waiting for the next one to start or whatever. You can go play for another 2 hours before the next event even starts up.
Even, like, the last RadCon that we had here in the Tri-Cities, at least half of the gaming room at all times was Magic.
Yeah, because that's part of the diversity where I was saying we don't all have the same stuff. Yeah. That's what also draws us together, though. What do you have? Do you have anything I need? You know, Magic used to have an ante-up rule because of the fact that cards were in such a limited print. They used to have an ante-up card that at the start of every game, you and the other guy had to put a card that you thought were equal ante-up and play for.
Ugh.
Yeah.
See, I was never a big fan of stuff like that.
They dropped it pretty quickly once they got picked up and were able to start producing an actual volume of cards. But it was a way to help keep cards moving and constantly circulating. But it also meant that you were going to keep coming back to play your friends and working on your things. And most of the time, if you're playing your actual friends, a lot of people were already starting to ditch the ante-up thing anyway.
Yeah.
Just because they were like, hey, we just want to play. But there was also that rule for, hey, I want to make this trade, but we haggled to an almost where we want it, but we seem to be kind of stuck. Let's ante up and play for it. I win, I get it for the 1 card. You win, you get it for the 2 cards. Done deal. Set and set. Cool. Now we let our decks and our hard work decide who gets what. And it's a very competitive game. The more I talk about it, the more and more I'm like, oh yeah, we are a competitive lot.
Very competitive people.
We had very, yeah, we, but... The good ones are competitive, but want to have fun.
Yeah.
And that's why I was saying some of the older heads, they'll be like, it brings people together. I have plenty of people who are like, I've seen friendships ended by Magic. That sounds like your friends had problems.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah. At the end of the day, we have to realize, now this might be part of my own personal journey. I have had to take a second where I look at Magic and go, is this my career or is this a game I play? Because I'm at the point of I am... I think I was 16 or 17. I was about to start getting an actual job, being able to start actually getting money in to where I could buy boxes of Magic and get into Standard and stay relevant with Standard and do a little side hustle of selling stuff on the side to help promote all of that. But I had to take a minute and look at it and be like, hey, is this a game that I enjoy or is this my career that I want to do? Not that those things have to be exclusively mutual, but how you progress from that point forward is significantly different.
Well, I was going to say, in a situation like Magic, in that kind of a field, it is very different. Because how you go about playing, because I love Magic and I want to play Magic, is very different than I want to actually make money playing Magic.
Yeah, I want to buy 4 or 5 packs a week and enjoy playing Magic. Or do I want to buy boxes and travel to tournaments to make money? Which you can make a lot of money. You can make a lot of money playing it. I have a friend who, he chose the opposite path. He chose to make it his career. When times are rough, they're rough.
Yeah.
But when times are good, they're good.
And I mean, that's just, it is. It's a choice. It's
looking
at yourself and being like, you can still play competitively without making it a career.
Yeah. The big thing he really learned was he made sure to do savings, very much treated it like a business once he started playing tournament-wise. I think he said that he decided to think about it as a business when he won his first $10,000 match. He was like, that's the moment I realized I needed to think of this not as just this game I played competitively to have fun, but that, oh, I just made like part of my college tuition, because he was still young enough to be thinking about that.
Yeah,
that he was like, I made part of my college tuition playing this game.
Not to...
You know, like, oh.
Like, 10K, man, that's like a good portion of my yearly income.
Yeah.
That would pay for me for, like, a good third of the year.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that if you don't think about it, like, have the epiphany he did, or think about it how I did, where I wanted to think about it before I started making the kind of bumps to even get to that kind of money, if you don't have that epiphany, you can blow that stuff and lose it all so quickly,
oh,
though.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, that happens to a lot of people that have... That's how any sport is, though. I mean, we have esports, you have anything like that. If you're not smart when you get that one shot to play hockey for a year, and you end up getting let go, nobody picks you back up, you better have saved that money.
Yeah.
Instead of going out and blowing it like a crazy, you know, like a crazy person.
Well, and I think that's just part of growing up, though, because a lot of people do that. I'm not saying that it's just young people that do that, because sometimes you get that crazy thing when you're in your 40s or 50s and you still blow all of your money.
They call it a midlife crisis for a reason.
But I think that's part of being a responsible adult person.
Yeah.
Is looking at that and going, oh no, this is money that I'm going to need, because what if it never comes back?
Yeah. And what he was looking to do, he was like, he's like, for me to get the small amount of college I need to do the things I want, he's like, it's going to be about $200,000. I made a 20th of that today. I win 20 more matches like this, and I can go to college on a full ride on my dollar.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's when I realized that, like, this was something I needed to think about. And that's where it's at, though, is we're talking, he didn't even win the big boy competition that one.
Jeez.
He won 10 grand, and he didn't win the big boy competition. I think the championship last year was like $500,000 or some crap like that.
It's so crazy to
like
me.
Where gaming, nerd gaming sports are going, like in their competitive scenes.
It's insane.
Halo 2 years ago, a year ago or two, had $1 million. 4 people per team. 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they had $1 million for the prize pool. That's $250,000 per person.
It's insane. Competitive gaming is insane to me. And I love part of me, the nerd part of me, is so excited to see like nerd games becoming that competitive versus
basketball.
The jock sports.
Yeah.
Like nothing to be said against sports ball. Everybody has their favorites. But the fact that the playing field is evening out now
so much more than they ever thought.
Hilarious to me.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna go. I bought a ticket to go see this tournament. Oh, cool. What team are you watching play? Oh, it's a Magic the Gathering tournament?
Yeah.
There aren't teams.
Yeah, I'm actually just watching Zero Cool. That's all I'm there to watch, is just that guy. I'm gonna go to every single one of his matches.
I'm voting for Zero, but I don't know who is gonna win.
Yeah, you know, I like James is kind of cool, so I might go kind of watch some of his matches. Yeah, exactly. That's also the cool thing is when you go to one of those tournaments and you are just kind of a spectator and there for maybe some of the smaller tournaments that are happening. Because normally when there's a big one, there's a few like F&M draft nights and stuff like that that are going to be going on that you can kind of go play and at least have some fun with while you're waiting for the people you want to watch. But that's the thing is you can have, you know, you could probably have 30 people that you're like, I really like watching all of these people play. Maybe five of them will end up in the big, you know, the real big games of that match. And you're like, okay, cool. Now I can start picking who I actually want. I'm right. Team this.
Well, and it's nice, too, because then you always have somebody to root for.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you came there to watch originally. You get down into the brackets and you're like, oh, I like this guy's play style. I really like this guy's deck.
Yeah. I've plenty of times been like, I have no clue who these people are, but I like that card and I can tell that he's based his deck off of that, like that situation. I want to see that win.
And then I'm the person that's just like, I really like the artwork for that card, so I hope you win because it's really pretty.
Oh, dude, I know a guy who has a couple of decks that are artwork from primarily, if not solely at this point, from certain artists.
Nice.
Like being like, no, this is my James Dillard deck.
I'm not going to lie. Back before I really knew what Magic was, right? I didn't know. I knew it was a card game.
Yeah.
But I'd never worked in a game store. I'd never really talked to anybody about Magic. But I'd seen some of the cards. And that, for a long time, was my goal as an artist, was to design Magic cards.
And that's a really awesome goal, too.
I no longer have it solely because the style of my art went in a different direction. Because Magic has a very beautiful, unique, ethereal style.
Just find the right set, man.
I do,
like I'm saying,
I
like,
do mostly like line art stuff now. So it's,
I think it's, you know what, to all the artists out there, I think it's still worth sending. They're how they started with their art and how I think his name's Mafford is his name. I have a terrible chance to have terrible times pronouncing his last name. But how their art director who started with them started out, he's kind of tried his darndest to keep that thought process and mentality in the art department specifically the whole time he's been around. And I think that he's walked away, but he still talked to like his predecessor and stuff about being like, this is how we started, never forget. And how they started getting their art was originally, the first set was all open license stuff that they just dropped that was super generic stuff. Ford thought that, like, played it, was like, this game deserves its own art, and talked to him about being like, hey, you know, what could you do if I could get you artists? And essentially they were like, all right, we can give you like $10 per image, 10 artist references, and 10 stocks into the company per like piece, essentially. And they're like, and we need 200 pieces in 3 months. And he's like, so if you can do that, we'll give you all these, you know, we'll give it all to you. And he's like, you know what, we'll even make it $20 because of the time limit. He's like, $20 per piece. And then he's like, all right, cool. Before I went back home, busted in the door to his apartment, or into his dormitory, which was currently holding like 6 or 8 of his friends, because 4 of them all lived there, and one of them was everybody had somebody over every night. They were a bit of a partying group. And he was like, cool, so I got us a gig, guys. And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, this is the deal, and he'll pay us for it. And they were like, are you kidding? He went to college at the Seattle School of Art.
Oh, nice.
All of his roommates were full-fledged artists who were going to school for art.
That's really cool.
They were all also starving artists.
Yes.
Because art was definitely not appreciated back then like it is today. It was in the like high society bit. But it wasn't as much looked at in the way of, oh, Magic cards has art.
Yeah.
You know, real art behind it.
Like, you could make a poster out of a Magic card.
Yeah, many people do. And it's that's what's really cool, too. And so he and, like, 6 to 8 of his friends sat around for the next 3 or 4 weeks solid every day, just skipping class to pump out art for this bit. Finally turned it in. They all made a decent profit. And then he hired them as, like, when they became big enough, he hired that whole team as their original art team.
Nice.
Yeah, so all of them had that, like, instilled of, communal art is a thing, and they do a lot of community art projects and stuff like that. That, so if you're an inspiring artist and you want to try to get into magic, send them your stuff and just keep sending it to them until they tell you yes. Even if you're like, ah, this isn't that great, start now. Pester them. They'll eventually
get
around to you.
Here's a moth in a bottle.
All right, here's my thing. If anybody's going to start drawing like one card to try to get into magic, I want them to draw my biggest dyslexic mess up in magic ever that at least was funny. I want an eye full of jar balls.
An eye full of jar balls.
Yeah, it's called Jar Full of Eyeballs, but I flopped it, set it straight 3 or 4 times until George finally went, eye full of jar balls. What are you talking about, George? It's eye full of... Yep, all right, yep, mm-hmm. I now, though, want an eye full of jar balls. So if anybody's willing to draw and make me a magic card for that, that'd be super appreciated.
I happen to know that you date a really good artist.
Yeah, but she takes forever to get artwork that I commissioned from her. See, and I don't have to worry about her yelling at me about this because I know she doesn't listen.
That's fair.
So I'm in the clear. So yeah, I asked for one piece of commissioned art when she wasn't even trying to take, like, she didn't even want money for commissioned art pieces. She was just asking friends and stuff. And I was like, no. Let me pay you. I know how much it sucks to be a starving artist. And I like to promote artists if I can, you know, even if it's 10, 20 bucks to make sure that you have supplies. And yeah. She's like, yeah, you know what? Fine. If you want to do that, donate whatever you think. So I gave her like 20 bucks. And I was like, I want this and I want this. And I was like, one, I kind of need on a time limit. So if you want me to give you some actual cash to take some of your actual time, I never got that one. I still haven't. Like to this day, still don't have it. And it's one of the coolest pieces, like, I actually want an art piece of. It's of this dude who's more or less writing his last words on the back of a broken leather chess piece.
Ooh.
In bone and blood.
Oh.
His own blood, different bone, but his own blood. And as he starts to scrawl down the last of his, like, human memories in this, like, dark cavern as all these ghouls more or less sit and wait for him to start dying to turn him. Because they're like, oh, we're not going to eat him. Yeah, he was already infected with ghoul fever, so they're like, we'll just let him die and become one of us. And so I was like, I really want to see that scene. Like, I want to see that in an actual art piece. It's just, I like dark and dingy things, and that would be a really fun dark and dingy bit my characters played through, my group went through the campaign for, and stuff like that. So it's just kind of one of those, like, oh, we did this. And so that was the other piece I offered. I wanted a piece from Skiven, and it took her 3 years. So, yeah.
So,
side tangent over.
Side tangent over. So this is part one of magic, because there's so much for magic that we could revisit and talk about. We could deep dive specific sets if we really, really,
so
really
much.
Wanted to. But for people who are just starting into magic, brawl decks, commander decks, that's kind of where you would point them to?
Brawl and commander. Because that singleton format is going to make you feel a lot better about buying that, you know, you buy a pack a week. Pack every other week, we'll call it, you know, pack a paycheck.
Yeah.
When you pull that really cool rare or that really cool mythic rare, and you're like, man, I wish I had a deck for this. You only need one. And that needing one is a really nice feeling to know that you don't have to deal with infinite combos latent throughout a deck unless they've worked really hard to get other cards that do the same do similar things.
Well, and the Brawl and Commander decks are usually also already themed for you.
Yeah, if
so
you're
you
picking
don't
up a constructed
have to,
one, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to actually gather up all of your whites or gather up all of your blacks or gather up all of your reds or greens or blues or whatever.
And the commander deck, so I know I said I don't like playing pre-constructed earlier. I don't like playing pre-constructed like planeswalker decks and 60 cards. The brawl decks still need a little more work in how their potency.
But you've been playing for a long time.
Yeah. But the commander decks are solid, solid decks that the last one I bought, I haven't changed.
Nice.
I actually bought a second one to add cards into another deck that I have.
Nice.
Yeah. They're a really solid purchase. They cost a little more, but they really have that extra value that they're charging you is definitely in those boxes. Third party wise, a lot of people, that's how they kind of evaluate certain decks like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think one in the last 2 years has been under what you actually pay for it.
Nice.
And oh no, it wasn't even under. It was just disappointingly low compared to the others. You were still making money off of it, but it was like $4 or $5, whereas the others were anywhere from 15 to 20.
Nice.
Kind of. And so the value's there. It's like, yeah, you're going to get hit harder now, but there is true value in these things instead of being like, oh, that's just what we use to get people into it.
And if you don't care about value, it's still a solid deck.
Yeah,
so.
It's still a solid deck that plays well. And that's where a lot of value comes into Magic. Cards aren't really valuable because they're neat looking. They're not really valuable because of this. Sometimes it's because they're specifically potent. But a lot of it's because this card works so well with this card, it makes it dangerous. You know, I have a common that nobody thinks about until I have two more pieces on my board and I go, cool, I infinitely mill you out.
Yeah.
And people are like, how? And I'm like, well, you didn't pay attention to either one of these two commons, but with this one uncommon, here we go. You know, it's a $5 card because it does this one infinite combo that's stupid cheap.
Which is neat.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. But yeah, Commander decks, Brawl decks, start with those kind of things. I know we didn't get super into the mechanics of how to play Magic. It is just so much.
There is a lot.
That I can't teach you how to play Magic in this podcast. Maybe that's something we'll think about later on doing as like a bonus episode or something where we will sit down and I will teach you, Hannah, how to play actual Magic.
You know, down the road, we could even do a AU Radio Facebook Live event.
Yeah.
We could sit down for 2 hours and go through how to play Magic and you could teach me how.
Yeah.
I've played one game of Magic in my entire
life. And then we can
life.
Archive that, and that can be a beautiful resource for people to use.
Yeah.
Because the video I used to show people doesn't seem to really be around anymore, and that really disappoints me because he did such a good job of taking all the extra lore, all the extra everything extra out and bringing it down to player mechanics, how to play the game. Now go play with cards that break those rules.
Which is honestly how I like being taught games. I love the lore behind games. I find game lore super fun, but I just need mechanics to learn how to play a game, and then I can get lore later.
And that's why I've refined over probably the last 5 or 7 years. I've really like been teaching people how to play a lot more. Like, oh no, you know what? It's probably been about 13 because my little brother was born, and that's really when I started thinking about how am I going to teach him at the youngest age possible to play. Well, I wanted to play really early on. Like, I wanted to play by the time I was 8 years old, and by the time I was 6, and I more or less was delayed for about 2 years because they were like, well, it's a little complicated, and I was like, well, maybe you guys just aren't trying to simplify it enough or think about how to simplify it enough. You can run really simple decks in Magic and do ridiculously good. And so I started thinking about it then. And so I've got a pretty good, as wordy as I am all the time, I've actually got a pretty solid, narrow, like, this is Magic.
I like it.
So
I'm excited to hear more about Magic. We will talk more about it. Probably not next time, but.
Yeah, probably not next time. This will probably be one of those series that we
will
wait for a couple, maybe a set or two to drop out. And then we'll start talking about, you know, maybe what's kind of new and kind of do like Magic updates, essentially, and just kind of talk about that kind of stuff now that we've got a basis.
I know as far as new stuff, Time Spirals just dropped.
Which I wasn't.
Came and went.
I wasn't super excited for, and then I opened some packs and was pretty stoked about. I forgot how much fun that set was. I bought very little. It was towards the first time I ever took a break.
Okay.
Where, like, I just didn't buy for probably 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back whole hog and heavy and bought 3 years worth of backlog, essentially. Like, a box of everything that had come out in the last 2 years.
Oh, man. And then, what's the new set that's dropping?
It's Strixhaven. And I'm actually really excited for Strixhaven because we just did Kaldheim, which was all Vikings themed.
Yay!
And I love Vikings. It's one of my favorite things to like study and read.
And the
play
artwork
around.
Was gorgeous on all of the Kaldheim decks. All the cards that I have seen have just been beautiful.
We got to experience god cards that weren't just themed off of the Egyptian gods. We got to see some real gods. We got a little bit in Throne of Eldraine, but it was like super tiny and limited. This one, they dropped some gods for us to play with, which was cool to see. And then, yeah, next we're going to do Strixhaven, which is going to focus, by what they've said, a little more around the, like, wizard slash cleric.
Ooh.
Or wizard and something else. It was wizard. Rogue and wizards.
Rogue
is going to be our next
okay.
one. Because this one was supposed to be our warriors and clerics kind of thought.
Gotcha.
Like, kind of set. The next one's going to be a wizard rogue kind of set. And then we're going to
so
get our next
offset.
So what
is Strixhaven based around? Because so far all of them have been based around like some kind of theme.
Hogwarts. More or less.
Oh, okay, so it is like, it is wizards.
It is a wizards. It's wizards. A wizard school. Kind
okay.
of, it's a wizards. So it's a whole plane that is a wizards college, more or less.
Gotcha.
And so there's lots of wizards and rogues due to the fact that there's lots of, you know, wizardly college intrigue, and you need somebody to do some of the wet work around there every now and then. So they've got lots of rogues for intelligence gathering and things like that.
Sweet.
And that's going to lead us to actually the next crossover they're going to do and why it's important that they're doing a warrior cleric wizard rogue set. Because we're coming out to...
So excited!
The Dungeons & Dragons crossover, where we've already seen a little bit of the partnering mechanic, but the last three sets are really setting up for the partner mechanic to blow up, because they're going to do a D&D themed, where it's going to be a lot about the party system. They're supposed to be introducing a new game type that's kind of like arch enemy, that's going to be supposed to be way more out there, that's like 360 cards versus 100 card non-singleton.
Oh,
like you can have four copies of whatever you want in there, and you start with more hit points. You're meant to be like the boss, essentially. And
nice.
So yeah, it's supposed to be a fun format. I'm so excited. Like, if you guys could see how giddy I am.
Like a little schoolgirl.
Yes, it's going to be wonderful. That set, though, is like 6 months out. So.
Well, and we'll talk about it more.
Yeah, probably when that one drops. I think that D&D has a book lined up to try to drop around the same time that's supposed to be.
They've been doing
kind of magic-y theme,
yeah.
To do it, you know, kind of hit on the both sides again. So I'm pretty sure that we'll probably talk at least to Dungeons & Dragons around then, and Magic, and do a little update around then.
Sweet. Well, it's been fun.
Yeah. Thanks for sitting here and listening to me ramble about a game I've played for way too long and spent way too much money on.
You know, I love hearing people talk about stuff that they're really, like, passionate about, because it makes it sound so much fun. Like, even if it's something that maybe I am not going to get heavily into, maybe if it's even something that I'm not super interested in, I always love listening to people talk about the things they love.
Yeah. We'll try to have somebody here next week when we talk about something like, we'll try to find somebody else who loves the game and that I
like. So it's
like.
Not just me going, please continue. Please
yeah.
Continue. Please continue.
Not only that, but just to add some extra opinion in, maybe we'll pick, you know, if we can't, maybe we'll pick one of your favorite games. You've got a favorite game out there. Even if that means we're going to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, I don't care.
All right.
We're getting towards that time. You know, we've had a few episodes that Magic's a pretty big one. D&D is another one of those ones that we can do a couple parters to if you want. And we can talk about that. I love D&D.
Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
It'll feel like forever.
It will.
Stay safe out there, everybody. Find that good gaming partner. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.